So born in country New South Wales, I celebrated my first birthday back in the 60s. But a few weeks later, decided that I was bored with this decade, and we moved into the decade of flares, big hair, and the first TV that my family owned. Some of my earliest memories as a child are of watching reports of the Vietnam War and thinking, why are people so unkind? Our TV was a big box with a small black and white screen that only had one channel, WIN TV, because we lived behind a hill that blocked the ABC signal. We also had a couple of radios, and here we were luckier because we had a whole two channels to listen to, the ABC station, 2BA, and the local Bega commercial station, then known as 2BE. We only received two newspapers as well, the twice weekly Bega District News, which we generally only bought once a week when Mum went to town on a Tuesday, so we picked up that paper. And then we had, of course, the Catholic Weekly. This was still the era of centralized media production and distribution. News content for our family came from these few defined channels. Broader information came from books that we bought or borrowed from the local school library. If you wanted to find out information for a school project, you read articles in the World Book Encyclopedia. Or if you wanted to seem especially brainy, you looked up the Encyclopedia Britannica. Eventually, my family were able to purchase our own set of encyclopedias when a door-to-door salesman, they still existed, convinced us to purchase a set of Funkin' Wagnalls, which as kids we liked to quote from because it was as close as we were allowed to say something that sounded a little bit rude. The Britannica, which published continuously since 1768, ceased publication this year. Its 65,000 articles, written by over 4,000 expert contributors, and its $3,000 price tag, could no longer compete with the 11-year-old Wikipedia, with its more than 22 million articles, over 4 million in English, and in 285 languages created by experts and idiots alike. When my parents sold our family farm 5 years ago and downsized to a smaller house in town, the decision to recycle the Funkin' Wagnalls was an easy one. They no longer had a relevant place in the 21st century. The world has certainly changed in my lifetime. Okay, in part, this is because I'm an old, middle-aged fart. Oh. I'm a bit of a fan of Adam Hills, as I like the kind of act that he does with the interpreter, so I was wanting to see how that would be signed. But mainly, this is because all of us who are now living through what objectively can only be described as either a revolution or a key watershed moment that the annals of human history, in whatever format that is, will record as a key turning point. In the work of Canadian educator, philosopher, and communications theorist Marshall McLuhan, who died on the last day of 1980, who, although born into an agnostic family, became a Catholic in his mid-20s and lived a subsequently devout life. This current revolution that he predicted and described with such accuracy is as significant as the two key watershed moments in human history that McLuhan identifies. First, he talks about the creation of the full alphabet, both vowels and consonants, which the Greeks invented back in the 8th century before Christ. And second, the conversion of a wine press into the movable type printing press by Johannes Gutenberg in 1439. Both of these innovations set in place revolutions that radically altered the shape and complexity of human history. What we are living through now is doing exactly the same. one of the dimensions of this present period is the way that hundreds of millions of people have changed from being content consumers to content producers. Our news no longer comes from only a few select channels, like when I was a child. We help to shape and create the news. Now, this is the case whether we have a regular website, or a blog on WordPress, or Blogger, or Typepad, or Weebly, a microblog, sorry. It's going to get worse. A microblog on Tumblr, or Twitter, a video channel on YouTube or Vimeo, a podcast, send out random emails or texts, or we just like using our iPhones to take photos of food or drunk friends, which we then share on Facebook. We have all become part of this social media network revolution. Okay, so time for a quick survey. So Facebook, which began back in 2004 and was opened up to non-student international users in September 2006, claims they have almost 1 billion users who are at least active monthly. 1 billion. About 60% of these use Facebook daily. So what about us? Now, I will presume that most people here have a Facebook account, so I won't ask you that. But hands up if you don't use Facebook, or you use it less than monthly. Okay, so there's a few hands up. Now, it's claimed that about 90% of daily Facebook users access it on their mobile devices. And surveys indicate that a majority of female users and a smaller proportion of males sleep with their phone to allow for quick access to the news feed upon waking. So does anyone here want to claim to doing that? Okay, over to 6-year-old Twitter, which claims about 500 million users, 500 million active users. So hands up, how many of them are here? How many active Facebook Twitter users? So hands up if you have a Twitter account. Now keep your hands up if you tweet at least weekly. And keep your hands up if you're a daily Twitter or tweeter. Come on, with all the tweets we've been getting today, there's going to be a fair few. So all of us are undoubtedly hoping to make better use of these new technologies to connect and interact with the young people that we minister with and their wider social networks using the Bishop's Protocols. In 2011, the Australian Bishops issued a new edition of the Social Networking Protocols for the Catholic Church in Australia, recognising a desire to use new technology for the greater glory of God insofar as it promotes growth in faith and communion with others. Now, respect for persons and human dignity is central to the protocols. The ACBC document provides simple, easy-to-understand guidelines for beginners in this area of social media. And, of course, we've included a copy of the social protocols in your handout, the green booklet you'll find. One of their greatest values, the protocols, may be to give them to the priests or parents in your parish or community to help explain why communication through social media needs to be such a central part of any youth ministry strategy. The protocols also provide guidance in providing a clear distinction between personal and professional communication, acknowledging that there is a great potential for the blurring of boundaries. Finally, they also acknowledge that even in a country like ours, that poverty prevents the full engagement of some, which can be a profoundly isolating experience. We've also provided the US Bishops' social media guidelines, which provide more background and helpful definitions, and go into a greater detail for how we can more effectively engage in this area. While some of the material is only applicable within the US, the guidelines lend themselves to ready adaptation and application within local youth ministry contexts. But finally, I want to offer two more personal reflections regarding social media. The first is little more than a question that seems to suggest a way forward in this area of social media. One of the particular characteristics of our church is a sense of God communicating with us through sacrament. Some theologians describe the way that we understand and appreciate the way the inflow of grace and our encounter with God as the Catholic imagination. Social networks and new technology provide new ways to bring the Catholic imagination into our experience. But the question is, how do we sacramentalize it? How do we ensure that what we are pouring our energies into actually provides that possibility of encounter with God? Yesterday we heard about integrity in ministry, but parts of the presentation disturbed me, including the suggestion that youth ministers should have two profiles, a professional and a personal one. Because integrity in ministry is not about being caught. It's about being part of this grace-infused world and being present in a world where the love of God is always present, sometimes in the most unusual places. We are called to be present in the midst of the world, living the kind of life that gives glory to God in everything and honors God in every person that we connect with. So examples may help from just the way that I kind of organize my social media life. So I guess the more professional way that I present is through my blog, which is often just a presentation of my Sunday homily. So I kind of keep that at a fairly professional level. Twitter is a little more engaging, a little bit more of me, but it's still at that kind of, I know that it's an absolutely public expression, and so I try and keep Twitter at that very professional level. Facebook, because it's a little bit more open and it's more of the sense of just with friends, there I allow myself a little more leniency and it's just the engagement and occasionally even the telling of a joke. So that's the sense of trying to keep that distinction. But there's no two profiles. The Richard Healy that you meet is just the Richard that you meet. So I think that's one thing, just to try and remember that sense of that public face and to live the kind of life that you don't really care what people find out about you because it's God-honoring. Finally, I want to mention my idea of social media currency or the SMC communications rating system. You need jargon, you need acronyms. So I joined Facebook back in May 2007. So at the end of the year when I celebrated my birthday, the fact that 20 or so friends wrote on my wall with birthday greetings, and in 2007 I only had about 70 friends, that experience rated highly, in part because of its novelty. So I would have rated it, say, as a 7 out of 10. But in subsequent years, the value of a Facebook birthday greeting has steadily declined, probably by about a point a year. The value of a happy birthday emoticon, either as a wall post or a message, barely now rates a 1. If there are a few lines of actual communication, it might increase in social media currency. An email, which once may have rated a few points, has now degraded in a similar way. Likewise, the ubiquity of text messages brings them down to probably a base level of 3 or 4, increasing only with the level of thought and sentiment contained within them. Old-fashioned greeting cards still rate much higher because they require a degree of planning to purchase, complete, and post them in order to be received in a timely fashion by the recipient. Which is probably why I hardly ever send greeting cards. Likewise, phone calls are still up there as 6 or 7 in my social media currency. But what hasn't changed over the years is the birthday greeting that is conveyed with a hug or a kiss, or quality time spent with family or friends or spouse. Not mine, of course. As social media becomes more prevalent, the quality of interaction that is possible over time inevitably declines. While it may be easier than ever to create events and invite friends on Facebook or use a trending hashtag to communicate an idea widely on Twitter or to bulk message the youth group via text message or messenger, we need to also acknowledge that the depth of what is communicated is often very limited. As messengers and missionaries of grace, we should always strive to offer those that we serve the very best that we can offer, and not accept anything that sells ourselves, young people, or especially the gospel short. So when given a choice, always go for the experience that rates a 10, not the 1.